Shalom Aleichem, dear friends. We're going to present an overview of the Sicha of Likutei the Sichas, Volume 17, about Erev Pesach. This Sicha is very Talmudic, very analytical. You might say it's a little bit of a pilpul, if you're familiar with the term. Sharing some of the things that I shared in my own Chabad House class on this Sicha. This is a class for beginners who want to get a handle on how pilpul works, the various sides of the analysis. Just to point out, as I pointed out in similar such classes, that one might argue, what's the purpose of this exercise? We're going to state a Jewish law, and then we're going to try to analyze what's the thought process behind the Jewish law. Why is it so relevant? And there's two sides, and we're splitting the hair. This is Jewish law. Follow it. Why is it so important? Especially that this is a law that may not be relevant to most of us. So there's a few explanations. First of all, when we understand what's behind the law, when we analyze the reasoning, that could also create a halachic legal difference, practical difference, but also beyond that, even if there isn't a difference, or this is a law that's not relevant to us personally in terms of practice, every Torah argument is God's thought process. Even if there's two sides of the argument, five sides of the arguments, if it's made by Torah sages, by Torah greats, in accordance with the Torah principles, as all the arguments clearly here are, these are all arguments of Torah, and therefore they're God's thought process. And this is considered a bona fide and actually the highest level of Torah study, which the purpose of that is not just to know laws, but to bind our minds with God. Every mitzvah is a direct personal connection with God, as he explains in Tanya chapter 23. However, Torah study is the greatest connection. Most mitzvahs is almost like giving a hug to God because you're physically doing the act. In Torah study, it's intimacy, it's total oneness because your mind merges with that of the divine. And this is true in any Torah study and especially in the analysis, in Talmudic Torah study, which is why this is considered the highest level of Torah study. It's what is most of the time is spent by yeshiva boys in a yeshiva studying things often that are not practically relevant now or may never be in their lifetimes. However, what's very relevant to them and to us is to understand how Torah thinks, which really means how God thinks. And even if it's two sages, five sages, 10 sages, all these different nuanced thought processes are God's thought processes. And by exercising our minds and trying to wrap our heads around them, we are connecting with Hashem in the greatest way. So just want to put that out there because this Sicha is going to do some of that brain exercise. The Sicha is about the fast of Erev Pesach. We know the firstborn males are supposed to fast on Erev Pesach to thank God that they were spared while the Egyptian counterparts were killed. Customarily today, we try not to fast, because I guess it's not so comfortable to fast Erev Pesach. You can come into Pesach, you're not going to feel good, and you won't really enjoy the Seder, which is a mitzvah. And therefore, we've replaced the fast. We've made the fast exempt for us by attending a Siyum Mesechta, a celebration of the completion of a tractate of the Talmud on that day. And this is done in almost every synagogue. And by attending that Siyum, finishing a tractate of the Talmud is considered a very joyous occasion. It now becomes Esudas Mitzvah, a mitzvah meal. And then the firstborn can eat, and the fast day is exempted. Well, this has become Jewish custom. We actually look to find a seal, so we don't have to fast, but we replace it with that seal. Now, what's interesting is, what happens when Erev Pesach is Shabbos, which is the case this year? Clearly, you can't fast on Shabbos. Jewish law says the fast is pushed back to Thursday. And this is what's going to be happening all over. In our shul this coming Thursday, we are going to have a seal to exempt people from the fast of the firstborn. The question of the Sicha is, what is the meaning of the fact that it's pushed back to Thursday? There's two sides to this analysis. Does it mean that the fast is nominally Shabbos, but we just give it a makeup date? Or does it mean that the fast actually this year is not Shabbos, it's originally on Thursday? Even though it's being moved because it's Shabbos, but now that it's moved, the sages now made Thursday the official fast day. This is the two sides of the argument of this sikha. Is Thursday a makeup date or is Thursday the actual fast day? What's the relevant difference between the two sides of the argument? It can be a very clear relevance, practical relevance. What happens if Thursday came and went and I forgot to fast or I couldn't fast? Should I fast on Friday? So here it goes. If Thursday is just a makeup for Shabbos, so I missed that makeup, I can do it on Friday. But if in fact in this particular setting, the sages moved the fast from Shabbos and moved it onto Thursday, Thursday is the fast. If you miss Thursday, then you missed it. You don't go fast on another random day. Let me bring up a spreadsheet that I'm going to use to walk us through this entire sikha, which I think will be helpful. So coming from the top of the page, fast of the firstborn is postponed backwards to Thursday. And I have in red color, the first side of the analysis that Thursday is a makeup date, in blue color, second side of the analysis that Thursday becomes the actual fast day. And on line 5, we indicate what is the practical halachic difference. If I missed Thursday, do I fast on Friday? Well, if it's a makeup date Thursday, then Friday can also be a makeup date. The sages chose Thursday because they would prefer you don't fast on Friday. It's so close to Shabbos. But you could if you need to. Conversely, if Thursday was chosen and now that became the actual fast day, if you miss Thursday, you don't fast on Friday. Now, on line 7 and 8, I'm borrowing an example from another subject just because I feel it will clarify it, this whole conversation. There's something called Pesach Sheni, the second Passover. It's also a concept of makeup. The Torah says you have to bring on the 14th day of Nisan, Erev Pesach. It's a mitzvah for every Jew in the times of the temple, hopefully very soon, hopefully this year we'll all do it again. The mitzvah to bring the carbon Pesach, the Paschal lamb. It's a very, very important mitzvah. What if someone couldn't bring it? They were out of town, they were impure, whatever. Torah gives them a makeup date 1 month later on the 14th day of Iyar. It's known as Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. And here's the analysis. It's not in this sikha, but it's brought in commentary, and the Rebbe talks about it in another sikha. Is that makeup date merely a makeup date? Or once Torah established that makeup date, it becomes an actual bona fide time for bringing the Karban Pesach? And what would be the difference? There's a practical difference. What if someone became bar mitzvah in between the first Pesach and the second, or conversely, converted to Judaism in between the first Pesach and the second? Depends how you look at it. If the second Pesach is the red column, it's merely a makeup date for the first. Well, in the first, he wasn't obligated to bring it. He was a child or he wasn't Jewish. So there's no point in bringing the second Pesach because it's merely a makeup. However, if you go by the blue column, that yes, once Torah decided to give you a makeup date for the first Pesach on the second Pesach, but the Torah now established it as its own entity, a bona fide Pesach day, carbon Pesach day. So who cares the fact that I wasn't obligated to bring the first one? Now I'm bar mitzvah or I'm converted. Now I want to bring it. And there's a whole discussion in that area. I'm just borrowing it to crystallize what is the concept of whether a makeup date is merely a makeup date or it actually takes on the full force of the original date. So coming back to our case, the fast of Erev Pesach is Shabbos this year. It's moved back to Thursday. The operative question of this sikha is Thursday a makeup date for Shabbos, or does Thursday become the new date? And we already explained the practical difference in line 5. The Rebbe is going to bring now a proof to one side of the argument, to the red side of the argument, that it's merely a makeup, and then he's going to bring a proof to the second side of the argument, and he's going to like the second proof better, and that seems to be the Rebbe's conclusion, that it's actually the blue column. The proof to the red column, the proof that the makeup day for the fast on Thursday is merely just a makeup day, is from another similar situation, the fast of Esther. When the fast of Esther falls on Shabbos, which it sometimes does when Purim is Sunday, there too we move it back to Thursday. However, Jewish law clearly dictates there that if that Thursday, there's a reason that you have to eat. For example, there's a bris, and a bris is considered a tremendous mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah to eat a meal. Especially the people intimately involved, the moel and the tzaddik, and the father of the child, etc. They have a real mitzvah to eat a meal. Jewish law, the code of Jewish law, the Ramah, dictates that they should eat the bris. They shouldn't postpone the meal to the nighttime as one would do on a typical fast day. They should eat the bris, and what should they do? They should fast the next day on Friday. So by the fast of Esther, it's clearly indicated that the postponement, the backwards postponement from Shabbos to Thursday, isn't that that becomes the new date. It's sort of random. It's a possible makeup date. And if you can't do it because you got a bris, you do it on Friday. So we clearly see the Jewish law sees the bumping back of dates as just a makeup. And that is absolute. It says so in Jewish law. But then the Rebbe says that that may all be well and true by the fast of Esther, but not in our case. In our case, there's a much stronger proof that the fast of Erev Pesach is different than the fast of Esther. At the fast of Erev Pesach, when it's in fact bumped back to Thursday, the Thursday becomes the fast day. What's the proof? That you can exempt yourself from that Thursday fast by attending a siyum of a tractate of the Talmud. Think about this for a second. If Thursday isn't the fast of the firstborn, it's just an option for a day when you might exempt yourself from your obligation of Shabbos. So how does it help that you attended a siyum on Thursday? Very nice. There's always Friday. So Jewish law would have to tell you to make another siyum on Friday. And it doesn't. Jewish law says that if you attend a siyum on Thursday, you have attended a siyum which has exempted you of your fast. Clearly, Thursday is not just an opportunity for you to make up for your Shabbos responsibility of fasting. Thursday became the fast day, and attending a siyum on the fast day exempts you. And there's no point of doing anything on Friday. It's done. And this seems to be the Rebbe's conclusion, that in the fast of Erev Pesach, when it's bumped back, that bump is a blue column bump. It's a real bump. Thursday becomes the fast day. And even though by the fast of Esther, it's not like that, by the fast of Esther, it's clearly that it's the red column, as we just indicated. In the fast of Esther, if it's bumped back to Thursday, it's just a makeup date, and it's fungible. And at times we say, don't do it on Thursday, do it on Friday. It's a different scenario. The Rebbe explains in the Sicha that the fast of Esther might be different than the fast of Erev Pesach. The laws of the sages take on different variables and different conditions. It doesn't always have to be uniform. And the Rebbe even explains what that difference might be, why the fast of Esther is red column and the fast of Erev Pesach is blue column. I'm not going to go into it because I feel it's going to derail the flow. But that's how the Rebbe concludes, or seems to conclude, and does conclude, according to my understanding of the Sicha. And so moving forward, the fast of Erev Pesach is a blue column fast. It is moved back to Thursday, and that becomes the fast. And the Sicha continues now in a very fascinating pilpul. But before I do that, I want to, in line 18, just to share a lesson. I always try to find a lesson from my class in the Chabad of Port Washington, where I prepared this shiur for. We have a nice group of people that gets together on Zoom every week, and they always want to know, what's the lesson? In this Sicha, very often the Rebbe spells out the lesson. In this Sicha, the Rebbe doesn't. However, I'm borrowing the lesson from the Sicha regarding Pesach Sheni. And that may be that, like we're saying here in this instance, that when we bump back the fast to a makeup date, that makeup date isn't merely a makeup date. It's actually a bona fide date. It becomes the real thing. The lesson would be the power of Teshuvah, which is a big Jewish concept, a big Hasidic concept, and certainly one of the Rebbe's pet themes, that Teshuvah retroactively corrects all the past. And therefore, if I decided midlife to do tshuva, I'm 40, I'm 50, I'm 60, I'm 70, it doesn't matter. And for example, I never kept Shabbos, God forbid. Now I start keeping Shabbos. It's not like I missed all those Shabboses. If I truly do tshuva and I make a firm commitment that from hence onward, 120 years that God gives me, I'm going to keep Shabbos, all my past Shabboses are retroactively kept. The same thing is with mikveh, with kosher, with everything. In fact, it even says about mikveh that a woman goes to the mikveh later in life, it's retroactive, and all her children that were born earlier in life, it's as if they were conceived in the purity of mikveh. How can that happen? I don't know. That's the power of tshuva. Somehow tshuva brings out deeper strengths of the neshama. We have to dig very deep to do tshuva. And God loves teshuva. It's extremely powerful in God's eyes. Bottom line is tshuva retroactive fixes the past. And in connection with this context of this conversation, the makeup date is not a makeup date. It's the actual date. The makeup tshuva later in life is not a makeup. It's the actual, like you never missed it. So that's just a sweet lesson that I want to put in. Again, it's not from this sikha, but it is from another sikha. So we could stop right here. And if you prefer, you can stop right here and you have basically the flow of the sikha, the red side, the blue side, and the Rebbe's conclusion. While by the fast of Esther, it's in the red. By the fast of Erev Pesach, it's in the blue. This is line 16. And this is wonderful. However, the next part of the sikha becomes even more interesting if you would like to go further. So let me scroll down further. The Rebbe is now going to bring a second proof to the blue column, to the fact that the fast of Erev Pesach is actually on Thursday. He's going to bring a second very powerful proof, by virtue of which it becomes much sweeter to go with the conclusion that we've already concluded, that it's the blue column. However, then the Rebbe is going to give reverse arguments to it, which is going to help us explain how come in the fast of Esther and in other places in Judaism, it's clearly the red column. But first, the Rebbe's argument, line 23, the second proof to side two, to the blue, that it's actually, the makeup date has actually become the new fast. The scenario is this. Again, it's this year's calendar. This coming Shabbos is Erev Pesach. Imagine a young man had his bar mitzvah that day, and he's a firstborn. His bar mitzvah is Shabbos. Now, what is he going to do to exempt himself from the fast? So you're going to say, well, like everybody else, he's going to fast on Thursday. But here's where it gets interesting. On Thursday, he's not a bar mitzvah boy. On Thursday, he's not a person who's obligated in mitzvahs. On Shabbos, he is. It's only a two-day difference, but it's a huge difference. Pre-bar mitzvah, he has zero obligations for mitzvahs. It's just educational or optional. The day he becomes bar mitzvah, he has the obligation of a full adult. So on Thursday, he's fasting as a child to exempt himself for an obligation that he'll have on Shabbos as an adult. It doesn't work. A child cannot exempt an adult of a mitzvah, just like a child can't read the Megillah for an adult, because a child doesn't have an obligation, the adult does. It's the same if it's the same person. It doesn't make a difference. So when he's Thursday and he's fasting as a child for his adulthood responsibility on Shabbos, it's not going to work. Says the Rebbe, and then you might say, well, let his father fast for him, like his father fasted all the years before his bar mitzvah. A father fasts for a minor, for a child who's a firstborn. So this year, he's still a child on Thursday. Let his father fast for him like he did for the past 11 years of his life, 12 years of his life. But that wouldn't work either, because his father is fasting on Thursday. Yes, on Thursday, the boy is not bar mitzvah, but the father is fasting on Thursday to exempt the boy from a fast of Shabbos when he has a full obligation as an adult. A father cannot do a mitzvah for an adult child. So we're stuck. If we say red column, we're stuck. Translation, if we say that the fast of Shabbos remains on Shabbos, it's just moved on Thursday as a makeup day, but really nominally you're fasting on Thursday for Shabbos, this bar mitzvah boy is left out in the cold. He can't fast for Shabbos because he's a child fasting for his adult state. His father can't fast for him on Thursday because his father is fasting for him as a child, but he's really fasting to exempt him from an obligation in adulthood. He's going to be left out. He's just not going to have any way of fulfilling this fast. However, if you say it's blue column, that this year the sages actually moved the fast from Shabbos to Thursday, and Thursday is now the fast day. So then it's very simple. He's a child, and his father will fast for him like he did for the past 12 years. The fast is not on Shabbos. The fast is on Thursday. And therefore, says the Rebbe, there's a very strong additional argument to say the conclusion that we said, that the moving back of the fast is an actual reassignment of the date from Shabbos to Thursday. And this way, we're not leaving that boy out in the cold, as we said here in line 23. It's a very nice, sweet argument. However, the Rebbe is now going to go backwards and reverse it. The Rebbe is going to say, and I don't think he's changing his conclusion vis-a-vis Erev Pesach, but he's saying this thought process, which seems so sweet, how can we leave the kid out in the cold? It's got to be that it's the blue, because otherwise he's stuck. He's in limbo. He can't do it, and his father can't do it. He can't do something in childhood for adulthood. Says the Rebbe, in the end, you can't, that argument can't be the conclusion of Torah, because we have other cases when it's clear. It's clearly red column. And what are you going to do there? The case that we mentioned earlier in the Sikha. We clearly concluded earlier in the Sikha that the fast of Esther, when moved back from Shabbos to Thursday, is clearly a makeup date, as you might remember, because it's fungible, and then you can do it on Friday if you need to. So in the fast of Esther, Jewish law clearly states that it's only a makeup. It's blue, it's red column. What happens if the kid is bar mitzvah on that Shabbos of the fast of Esther? What's he going to do with that Thursday? He's got the same problem. His father can't fast for him, he can't fast for himself. And clearly Jewish law says that it is a makeup date. It's a red column situation. So there's something wrong. The Rebbe's argument is very sweet in line 23, but in line 26, the Rebbe says, if that argument was absolutely true, then it would create an issue for the way we would understand the fast of Esther, which is clearly a makeup date. And clearly there's gotta be a way for that kid to observe that fast. It's not rational to say that for the first 12 years of his life, he did it. How did he do it? That suddenly this kid, that somebody is left out of the fast of Esther, it doesn't make sense that he's left out. And therefore, there's got to be an answer to this scenario, even if you go with red color. And in 29, the Rebbe says, there are other examples, and he cites a few. I'm going to cite one. What happens if Purim is Shabbos, which this nowadays cannot happen in diaspora because of the way the calendar is set up, but it could happen in Jerusalem, in the gated cities, and Purim can be Shabbos, as it was in fact this year. And what do you do when Purim is Shabbos in Jerusalem? The Megillah is read on Friday. That's Jewish law. So now what do you do in this scenario, says the Rebbe? The Bar Mitzvah boy is Bar Mitzvah that Shabbos. It's the Shabbos of Purim. The Megillah is read the day prior. How does he fulfill his obligation? If you go with the theory that anytime something is bumped back, it must be that the new date is the actual date. Because otherwise you're left out in limbo. You're going to have to say the same thing by Purim. He can't read them. If Purim is Shabbos and he's Bar Mitzvah on Shabbos, and now Friday he's going to read his Megillah, he's a child exempting himself from an adult responsibility. So he clearly can't read the Megillah for himself or hear the Megillah for himself, because on Friday he's a child. So you're going to be forced to argue that what? That Friday, that when Purim is bumped back from Shabbos to Friday, Friday becomes the actual day. And he's reading Friday as a minor, because otherwise you left him out in the cold. And we have no reason to believe that by Purim, the bumping back of a date means that that becomes the bona fide date. We don't know. We clearly argue by the fast of Esther that that's not the case. So the Rebbe in these two arguments, line 26 and 29, pushes back on what he said in 23. In 23, the Rebbe said, from the fact that if you're bar mitzvah on a Shabbos, and then that Shabbos is pushed back, it's clear that it's a blue column approach, because otherwise you're left out in the cold. The Rebbe says there are a lot of cases in Torah where we don't know that it's blue column. In fact, the fast of Esther, we know for sure it's red column. And yet that is Jewish law. We push it back. So the Rebbe says the argument doesn't hold so much water, the line 23 argument. We have to say that even though an observance is pushed back, like in the case of the fast of Esther from Shabbos to Thursday, or possibly in the case of Purim from Shabbos to Friday, that pushed back observance may very well just be a makeup date and not an actual bona fide movement of the day. And yet it would still work out for the Bar Mitzvah boy. How would it work out? So here's where the Rebbe comes up with a chiddush, with an innovative thought to respond to that. How will it work out? Let's zero in on the example of Purim. Shabbos was Purim, and he reads the Megillah on Friday. And we said, what do you mean? He's a child. How can he read the Megillah or hear the Megillah as a child to exempt himself from a Shabbos obligation? And let's go with the argument that the pushed back Purim is merely a makeup date. It's a red column situation, which it may very well be. Rebbe discussed in the footnotes if it is or it isn't, but it may very well be. So how is that boy reading the Megillah on Friday to exempt his Shabbos obligation when Friday he's a minor and Shabbos he's bar mitzvah? How could a minor exempt the obligation of a bar mitzvah boy, of an adult? The Rebbe innovates the following fashion. The Rebbe innovates as a discussion in other sichos, what's the obligation of a mitzvah on a child? If you're a child, nominally, you don't have any obligations. This might be an obligation on the parents to educate you, but the child himself has no obligations until they become 13 years old or 12 years old for a girl. And suddenly, boom, presto, they have all the obligations of mitzvahs. But the Rebbe argues in other sichos that that's not entirely true. That while the actual obligation doesn't hit until they become bar or bat mitzvah, but if there's mitzvahs they need to know immediately upon reaching that age, they clearly have an obligation to learn about it and be ready to perform it when that moment comes. Because if not, they're negligent. They knew the day's coming. It's not a surprise. They're looking at the calendar. They're preparing for their big party day. So being that they know the day's coming, clearly they have to make preparations. And if they just show up on that day and say, oops, I'm bar mitzvah, I don't have tefillin. I don't know how to put on tefillin. I don't know how to read the Torah that I need to do for my bar mitzvah, the tefillin. That is negligence. So therefore, you must say that even before 13 years old, the child has an adult-like obligation to be prepared for adult-level responsibility. This is similar to the concept of machshirei mitzvah, preparation for a mitzvah. A mitzvah that has a certain time, which means before that time, there's no obligation. Take an example, Sukkos. The mitzvah to sit in the sukkah begins at nightfall on Sukkos. The day before, there's no mitzvah obligation of Sukkos. But can someone ignore the fact that Sukkos is coming and not bother to build a sukkah? And someone says, are you building the sukkah? He's going to say, what do you mean? It's not Sukkos yet. I don't have any obligation to build a sukkah. It's not Sukkos. The Sukkos mitzvah starts tonight at nightfall. And the answer is, you're an idiot. Of course, the mitzvah of sukkah starts tonight. But every mitzvah that requires preparation, clearly the preparation is part and parcel of the mitzvah, because the mitzvah won't happen without the preparation. And therefore, you must go before Sukkos and arrange your sukkah, even though there's no sukkah mitzvah on the day before or the week before Sukkos. There's no such mitzvah. It's true, but there's a pending mitzvah. And a pending mitzvah, by definition, requires preparation. And that preparation is a mitzvah. It's not optional. It's a must. Because without that, the mitzvah won't happen. And therefore, it's sort of that the mitzvah extends itself back in time in order for it to be able to happen when Sukkos comes. Similarly, says the Rebbe, a fascinating thought, that the bar mitzvah boy or girl is obligated to do mitzvahs or learn how to do mitzvahs before their bar mitzvah, in time for their bar mitzvah. They must know and be practicing how to do it, because otherwise they can't do the mitzvah. The Rebbe applies it to this situation. That if there is, for example, my bar mitzvah Shabbos Pur, today is Friday Pur, and I'm reading the Megillah. And why am I reading the Megillah? To exempt myself of my obligation of tomorrow. And we ask, how could the child do it for an adult, even though it's the same person? And the answer is that the child is doing it as a pre-adult. The child is doing the preparation for tomorrow's mitzvah, which is an absolute obligation. And tomorrow's mitzvah will not happen without today's preparation. In this case of Purim, when it's bumped back, today's preparation is actually reading the Megillah on Friday, so that tomorrow when I get to Shabbos and the obligation hits, I will have done it. It's a fascinating, innovative, creative approach which solves the dilemma of line 33, of line 29. It solves the dilemma that whenever Torah, Jewish law, pushes back an obligation, and in cases where it's not blue column, it's not always blue column, as we said in the Fast of Esther, it's clearly red column. In other cases, it may also be red column. We don't know. We don't have to resolve that all areas of Torah are the same way as the Rebbe resolved for Erev Pesach, as the Rebbe concluded for Erev Pesach. We don't know how it is in other cases of Jewish law. And we don't need to force ourselves to make all areas of Jewish law align with that, because we're not leaving the kid out in the cold. How? With the Rebbe's innovative chiddush approach that, yes, the boy should read the Megillah on that Friday as a pre-adult, let's call it. Or in the case of the fast of Esther, he should fast on Thursday for a fast that he'll be obligated for on Shabbos, and he's fasting as an adult. The same way, he's preparing his sukkah before sukkahs. He must fast on Thursday so that come Shabbos and he has the obligation, he will have done it. And here too, there's a sweet lesson, one might say, even though the sikha doesn't spell it out, but it's spelled out in other sikhos. The Rebbe emphasizes tremendously the importance of preparation of a mitzvah, that it's part of a mitzvah. A, to bring out, obviously, that you have to prepare for a mitzvah. But B, if you think about it by extension, if preparing for a mitzvah is also holy and also a divine act, then one might say all of our daily activities, if they're done l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, and even going about our business, making a living, taking care of our health, even our hobbies, if they're there for a purpose of calming our mind so that we can be the best that we can be in order to do mitzvahs, by extension, every part of our lives can be sort of a mitzvah preparation. And the Rebbe argues in other sichas, therefore, all of our behaviors are mitzvahs. This is a big theme. This is a Rambam theme, really. But the Rebbe brings it home. Chassidus brings it home in a big way, that everything that you do is for the sake of heaven. But even more so, it's directly related to a mitzvah, because the mitzvahs in life require that we make a living, require that we have our health, require that we have our wits about us. So all of those things are now mitzvahs, because they're mitzvah preps, as per this argument. And by extension, the collective Jewish people, even though we're only going to do mitzvahs properly and completely, when Mashiach comes, all the mitzvahs that we do in exile are preparation for that. And therefore, in a sense, we're already living Mashiach. We're already living that perfect era, because we're living with the anticipation and with the intention that our mitzvahs should bring it about. And therefore, we're actually living the mitzvahs in perfection as a preparation. Okay, have a great Pesach, and thank you.